The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
Back, the second hour is live. It's been a busy one so far. We just got through chatting with Brian Harsin, the new Auburn coach, an hour away from Bill Walton. Yes, that Bill Walton. We will also talk to Kansas Story Lee during this half hour, the athletic director at Vanderbilt. Later in the program, we'll talk to a friend of ours who covered Henry Aaron as he chased Babe Ruth during that fateful summer of 73 into the spring of 74. In case you have not heard, Hank Aaron passed away earlier today, and the entire world is remembering him. Back to your phone calls at 855-242-7285, and let's check in with Terry, who is in Tampa. Hey, Terry, welcome to the show.
Hello, Mr. Paul.
Hey there. Thank you.
Thank you for taking my call. It's an honor and a privilege to talk with you on your great show.
Thank you very much.
And you know, your great show is also people like me know that it's a cultural show. We watch your show, we see people that are, their parents are dying, and they always say that, well, you know, we always watch Mr. Feinbaum on TV, and today your show started off. The first segment was, and now continuing, it's with Mr. Hank Aaron's passing. That interview you had with the new Auburn coach was awesome. I think Auburn's got a good one there.
Thank you.
But the last couple of times that people called in, they were talking about the effect they had, the effect that Mr. Aaron had. Who is the greatest baseball player you have ever watched on television or watched in person?
Yeah, I would probably say, and it's a tough question because I grew up a baseball fan. I have moved away from baseball like a lot of people, but as a kid, that's all I cared about was baseball. So I watched it religiously, and my mom was a baseball fan. My dad was a baseball fan. I would say Willie Mays growing up. I didn't really catch his prime, which was, mid to late 50s into the 60s. Unfortunately, I saw more of the autumn of his career. But he was probably my favorite player growing up. I got a chance to talk to him a couple of times later in life, as I did with Henry Aaron, and they were both, I would say, gobsmacking moments where you are not the adult doing the interview, you are the kid who was in awe, and I've only had that happen a couple of times in my life. It was those two. The first time I interviewed Joe Namath, I couldn't get the questions out. And the first time I talked to Bart Starr, I came very close to throwing up all over the microphone.
Well, thank you, Mr. Paul. I appreciate you. And once again, it's, you follow the SEC, but you got to realize that you have a bigger reach than that.
Thank you very much, Terry. That means a great deal. You be well. Let's check in with Les, who is up next. Hello, Les. Welcome.
Hey, Paul. Thanks a lot for taking my call.
Thank you.
A couple of weeks ago, maybe three, you let me have nearly a whole segment to vent how I felt about the coaching disaster and debacle thing that was going on with Kevin Steele, and I, for one, am glad that they didn't hire him. Having listened to Brian Harsin and things that's been going on the last few weeks, I think it's embarrassing the way they got around to him. But, Paul, I got to tell you, I think they got the right guy.
Boy, the thing that struck me about Coach Harsin, Les, is just, he is laser-focused. He doesn't answer a question by saying, it's an interesting question, let me think about it. He's got 1, 2, 3. Every answer is systematic, and that's the makeup of a very organized person, someone that has a plan and you hope can execute it?
Well, I don't know how it's going to work out, but I got to tell you, I am really impressed with him. Before I get off the phone, I want to tell you, I'm not going to tell you how great you are and how wonderful your show is, but this will tell you how I feel about you. I've been reading you and listening to you since the early 80s when you were at the Post-Herald, and I don't even know if you're going to remember this, but every year when the top 20 would come out, a week or a few days later, you would give a article on the worst 20. Do you remember doing that?
I do. Yeah. I always had this proclivity toward the worst versus the best, but I appreciate you remembering my writing career.
I used to get a kick out of reading that and the comments you would make on them. And surprisingly, a lot of those teams that were in the bottom 20 are now in the top 20. It's crazy how things turn around.
Well, thank you for the kind words, and you take care of yourself. Thanks a lot. Let's check in with Matthew, who is in Pittsburgh. Hello, Matthew.
Mr. Paul, how's it going today?
Matthew, it's going great. Thanks for calling.
Yep, my first time caller, I got right in. I'm feeling lucky today.
Well, I'm glad you did.
So I'm a Pac-12 guy. I grew up in Oregon. I'm an Oregon Duck. I married into the SEC, a gal from Lexington, so I am now a Wildcat. I listen to your show all the time. I'm calling to talk about Larry Scott, and do you know of any possible replacements for him? And what would it take to get Greg Sankey to leave the SEC for the Pac-12?
Yeah, there are a number of replacements being mentioned, and I really too many to mention. I mean, because I don't think there is a favorite. Now, I don't want to represent Commissioner Sankey here, but I will tell you that he is not. I think I feel comfortable in saying he's not leaving the SEC to go to the Pac-12. And the reason I say that is I know the commissioner to be an extremely smart person, and he would not leave the best conference for the worst conference in the Power Five.
That is valid. That is valid. Yeah, we just need someone to raise us back up, you know, just.
Yeah, I will tell you this. We had a guest yesterday from California, John Wilner, who covers the Pac-12, probably the leading writer out there. And he said one of the prerequisites is going to be a person that has familiarity with the Pac-12, meaning some experience in that league. And you know, he mentioned a number of athletic directors who either went to school in the Pac-12. Were athletic directors in the Pac-12. Probably the most interesting name he mentioned was Bob Bowlesby, the Big 12 commissioner, who I think was at Stanford before going to the Big 12. I don't know if that's something that would interest him, but it's going to be someone that understands the territory, and even more important, understands television.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'll make sure to listen to yesterday's.
I would listen to Wilner because he broke it down very effectively.
Gotcha. Yep. I'm just ready for the Pac-12 to get back to the middle of the pack. We are definitely at the bottom of the Power Five conferences, and it kills me.
No, I understand. I've got some friends who are Oregon. In fact, I'm a huge fan of Mario Cristobal. We have him on all the time here, and. It's too bad that program because that's too good a program. Hey, thank you very much for the call. And Dustin is calling next. Hey, Dustin.
Hey, Paul. Dustin from Arkansas again, buddy.
You
got a couple
it.
Of questions for you if you don't mind asking them for me.
Not at all.
My first question would be, what direction do you think Tennessee is going to go when it comes to a head coach? Do you think they're going to stay within the conference as a coordinator, or do you think they might expound throughout the NFL? I was thinking maybe even talking to Clemson defensive coordinator. That guy's got it going on down there. And so I just wanted your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I frankly, if I had to guess, I think it's going to be an offensive-minded coach. I think Tony Elliott, their offensive coordinator, Clemson, someone you might see interviewed. Ultimately, I think it's going to be someone with head coaching experience, maybe from the group of five as opposed to the power five. I don't know Danny White very well. I know a lot about him. I think he's going to try to bring someone new into the equation as opposed to grabbing a quote-unquote Nick Saban assistant.
Right, right. Do you think that Jim Chaney, his time at Tennessee's done? Because I know when he come back, he said he wanted to retire from Tennessee.
Yeah, I mean, I would say there's almost no way of knowing the answer to that, because if you bring in an offensive-minded coach, then your offensive coordinator is rendered somewhat useless.
Yes, sir. One more thing, Paul, and I'll let you go because I know you got other callers. You made a statement the other day, and I'm just going back to my roots. I'm 37 years old, and I'm going back to how I was raised. I was raised disciplined. And I noticed that you made a comment the other day talking about Tennessee, that the days of, like, the Nick Saban get-up-in-your-face, hard-nosed discipline is almost gone. And the Nick Saban's about the only one that can get by with that these days. Why are we leaving that? Because I still believe in the old way. If you had to grab a face mask, grab it. But now it's like we got to cupcake these players because we don't want to hurt their feelings. And so we're getting away from that hard discipline. Why are we different?
Yeah, Dustin, you know, what you always have to think about, and, you know, what I would do or what you would do are great, but that's not what these young players are thinking about. I do believe all young athletes want discipline, whether they admit it or not. And Saban has preached this, and other great coaches have preached this for time in memoriam. But I think what you have to understand is that young people, and I still remember my parents telling me and my friends, you people are the worst generation that has ever existed. And I've heard that passed down now for many, many different generations. And I don't mean that in terms of, you know, being a bunch of people that just are slovenly. I mean that the farther away you get from the golden era, things change. And young people today grow up in a different world than I did. And I thought I grew up in a modernistic world. It's archaic compared to what they are experiencing and exposed to. So you just have to be a little, you still have to employ discipline, but you have to do it differently because there are so many distractions nowadays that there weren't many, many years ago. Up against the break. Thanks for the call. We have a lot to do. Bill Walton will join us in the next hour. He grew up from a similar generation and he needed a little coaching from the greatest of all time in basketball. We are coming back. We will talk to the athletic director at Vanderbilt, talk about some of the challenges that her program has encountered and some of the good news as well.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And welcome back. We are so glad that you are here, and we are really delighted to welcome back to the show our next guest, Kansas Lee, the Vanderbilt Athletic Director. So many things that are happening in intercollegiate athletics, especially at Vanderbilt. Kansas, thanks for making time. We hope you're well.
Thank you, Paul. I appreciate it. I'm doing well. I hope you are, too.
We are. I have to start with a couple of days ago at the inauguration of Vice President Harris and President Biden. Sarah Fuller was there introducing the vice president, and I know this is a pretty easy question to answer, but what were your thoughts as you saw that unfold and the whole experience that everyone's had with Sarah this year?
Oh, I thought it was amazing, and Sarah is easily the most famous person at Vanderbilt right now, and we are so proud of her. I thought it was amazing that she was asked to participate in the inauguration, and you know, it was just a tremendous day for so many reasons, but I think Sarah represents just what's possible. And just thinking about young girls in particular, like, I was blown away by all of the young girls and pictures on social media, and it was just so powerful. And as much as she's been a sensation and someone to respect and to celebrate, I think the best thing for us, or something that I'm really proud of, is that when she set out to do what she did with the football program, she was just a student athlete stepping up for a team and a young person who took advantage of an opportunity. She didn't do that, and we didn't do that thinking about the publicity or what was to come. It's just a beautiful, simple story of someone taking advantage of an opportunity and filling in a need. And I'm really proud of her.
It is amazing, and I think so many others were as well. But what a stage to be on, and she handled that just as well as she did when she came in to kick for Vanderbilt. It was amazing. Let me ask you about one other thing, because there's a lot to unpack here. But this is a special week. It has been all week for women's basketball. The WEBAC Pat conversation that has been going on, and we've talked to so many great athletes, including Candace Parker the other day, and she could barely keep a dry eye talking about Pat Summitt. You saw Coach Summitt from a little bit of a different perspective, but as a former student athlete, for anyone, I guess I'm answering my own question, but I'm really interested in your thoughts on Coach Summitt and how we continue to celebrate her.
Well, you're right that I saw her from a different perspective and that I didn't play for her, but I have tremendous respect for her, and I knew how important she was to the game, and not just to, and I should rephrase that, not just to women's basketball, but how important she was to athletics. And she was just a tremendous coach, and it wasn't because she was a woman, it wasn't because she was coaching women's basketball. She's a tremendous coach and student of the game, and even though, you know, Tennessee and Vanderbilt are rivals and all of that, and that's very, you know, we love competition, but you put all that aside, and I know how important she was to just many of us. She's a trailblazer. You know, I went to our men's basketball game in Knoxville last weekend and drove by. It was my first time seeing the statue that they had erected in her honor, and it was just beautiful. And I stopped there for a while and just took it in, because I know how important she was. And in many ways, I'm very clear that without Pat Summitt and people like her, then people like me don't have the opportunity that I have.
Quite a statement indeed from an outstanding former student athlete. Candace, I know this has not been an easy winter for any of us, but especially at Vanderbilt with the decision, and I want you to expound on it, for the team, the women's team, to shut down. I know that wasn't easy.
No, it wasn't easy for any of us, and I'm disappointed for those student athletes and just for them having to have an abbreviated season. But, you know, we said from the very beginning, you know, we're all going through a pandemic, and none of us has been through this before, and we're making the best decisions that we can with the information that we have. And at the very beginning of this, we said to our student athletes that health and safety is first, and you have the option to opt out if you don't feel comfortable. And as competitive as we all are, I mean, I do not know what it's like to be a student athlete during this time. You know, and I do like to call on my, you know, student athlete experience as much as I can, but I can't relate to what it's like playing during COVID-19. And our young people across all of our sports, they're to be commended because they've worked very hard and they've been as nimble as possible. And everything is context specific. That particular program had endured quite a few injuries. When you combine that with opting out and just their general concerns, I think they played as long as they felt was comfortable. And when they made the decision, we support it. And it's important to me, you know, if we tell you that you have the option to do that, we need to stand by what we say. And, you know, they didn't opt out of being Vanderbilt student athletes. They're very committed to that, but they did opt out of the season, which was their choice. And, you know, we're all disappointed, but the most important thing is that they stay healthy and safe. And, you know, I think we've demonstrated that you can do it, but it's very, very challenging. And so they are, you know, there is no shame in it. I know that there are a variety of opinions, but the reality is that we're here to develop and support young people, and they need to feel that they have the best opportunity to compete and win. And those young ladies did not feel like they had that at this time, and so we're looking forward to next season with them.
Talking to Candace Lee, the athletic director at Vanderbilt, and there's a lot to discuss from a football standpoint. This season was a challenge for everyone, and mm-hmm. we all know what Vanderbilt went through. I mean, there were some games that maybe shouldn't have been played, but were. But you did have to reach a conclusion to make a change, and I want to talk about Coach Lee in a minute, but take us back, because I know everyone loved Coach Mason there, so these are not easy decisions to make for anyone. What went into your mind and others to conclude that Vanderbilt football needed a change as well?
No, you're right. Everybody did love Coach Mason and loves Coach Mason, and I absolutely enjoyed working with him and consider him a friend and still do. You know, at the end of the day, I felt that it was necessary to make the change just based on the trajectory of the program. And again, context matters. You know, as we think about our athletics department and positioning ourselves for the future, I just think change was necessary. You know, some things, and you know this, Paul, that, you know, you got to be a little lucky. Things need to line up right. The stars need to align. There's a lot of things that go into being successful in a program, and sometimes change is needed. It is important to us that we put ourselves in position to compete and to win. You know, I've talked to our staff a lot about, I think people forget that we are charter members of the SEC. We've not always conducted ourselves like we belong, and it's important to me that we do that. And, you know, football is certainly our marquee sport, or it's the most visible. I would say at this time, you know, our marquee sport is baseball, of course, but it's important to me to try to get all of our programs in a position where they are being successful and we are providing the best experience, which includes winning for all of our student athletes and our coaches. And so it was time for a change. It was time for a change. But, you know, I think the important message here is that, you know, I believe deeply in cultivating relationships with my coaches. And so when it is time to make the decision that is in the best interest of our department and our university, you know, it's hard. It's hard because Derek and I have worked together a long time, and we went through quite a bit together here at Vanderbilt. He is a fine coach and a finer person. I was really excited to see him resurface at Auburn. I knew that he would land on his feet and have many opportunities. So it's nice to see him still within our conference. But, yeah, change was necessary. And I'm very excited about Clark Lee. He's continuing to put together his staff, but he hit the ground running. And everything that I saw in the interview process is sort of coming to fruition as he now makes his way back to Nashville. You know, he's excited, he's strategic, he's very intentional. I like his, he's sort of wise beyond his years, and he knows the challenge that is before us, and he is embracing it, as am I, and we're very much walking arm in arm, and I'm looking forward to the future. And I think Vanderbilt fans will be very excited about what's to come.
And it's a question I know you get wherever you are. It's always a question about Vanderbilt football, but you know, what are the expectations of this program?
Well, you know, the expectation of all of our programs are to compete and to win at a high level. You know, I think that we are clearly in the best conference in the country, the most competitive conference in the country, but we think we can win in it. If you look at our history, we've not participated in many bowl games, but that should be an expectation. And I think, you know, if we do the things that we're supposed to do from a scheduling standpoint, from a preparation standpoint, from an investment into facilities and other resources standpoint, then there's no reason why we cannot be highly competitive. I think that starts with being competitive in the East. I think it starts with sustainable success, so going to bowl games on a regular basis to help galvanize the fan base, and that will help recruiting, and that will, you know, that will help the sense of engagement around us. You know, all of those things feed into a successful program. You know, so sustainable success is what we are after, and I know that we can do that at Vanderbilt. I know that we can. It's going to require some intentionality on our part.
Finally, and it seems like it was a year ago when we first started talking to you, when you became the interim and then ultimately the permanent athletic director. And yeah, I don't know if hopefully there will never be a year quite like this one. But as you reflect back, with so many things that happened just with COVID and then the summer with the conversation about social justice that we had back in June, how will you remember this 12-month period?
You know, there's no doubt that it's been challenging, but I know I'm in the right spot, because even with all of the things that I could not have expected, I'm still very excited and energized about what we're going to do and what's to come. It has not been without some surprises. You know, some of the things I expected, many of the things I didn't. You know, Paul, I think we've talked about this before. You know, I'm from a military family, and everything that, you know, I grew up understanding that everything is mission-driven. And so despite all the different things that were coming, you know, and it's a heavy lift. You're trying to overcome a pandemic. You're trying to endure this reckoning as a country that we're having with racial injustice. You're trying to stay focused on serving young people and building a staff and energizing, I say energizing the fan base, but also just starts in our building and on our campus. And so it's a heavy lift, but at the end of the day, the mission is very clear to me. And we are going to put ourselves in position. I mean, we are transforming this athletics department. And so that's clear. There are bumps along the way. I understand that, you know, but fortunately, myself and my team, we're up for the challenge, and I'm very appreciative of the opportunity. I'm going to look back on it as a heck of a way to start my career in this seat.
Kansas Story Lee, we always enjoy catching up to you, regardless of what the story that precedes the conversation. You be well, and thank you, and come back soon, I hope.
Thank you so much, Paul. Take care. I appreciate it. Thank you.
You got it. What a fantastic conversation with Kansas Lee. We are going to take a break. More on the program, to say the least. Your reaction to all of that when we come back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Tax Act can think of a million things more fun than filing taxes. Tax Act is going to name some now. Sitting in traffic, folding a fitted bedsheet, listening to your coworker talk about his fantasy team, digging a hole, digging an even larger hole next to that original hole. Unfortunately, TaxAct's filing software can't make taxes fun, but TaxAct can help you get them done. TaxAct, let's get them over with.
And we welcome you back. It's great. Great to have you here, and let's get back to the calls at 855-242-7285. And David is up next. Hey, David, go right ahead.
Hey, how's it going, Paul? I talked to you a couple times from over like a truck driver.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I was just calling just to say, hey, man, you make my day out there on the road.
Thank you.
A lot of people don't understand they have nothing to do with race. It's a human race. That's what I appreciate about you and the sport, talking about the SEC. I just wanted to call and tell you that, man. Thank you for making my day out here on the road.
Well, thank you, and you be safe out there. Take care, David. Thank you very much.
All right, take care.
Great to hear from you. You bet. So let's check in next with Daryl, who is up next. Hey, Daryl, go right ahead.
Hey, Paul, it's Daryl. Glad to be on your show. I used to buy a lot of airtime on your show, and after promising Ed Earhart in a restaurant in Bermuda that I would. We can talk about that later. But
well, great.
But I wanted to talk to you about a changing of the guard. If you look at college athletics at the highest levels, traditionally the commissioners at the Power Five have had the jobs for years. The Big Ten over 20 years recently changed.
Right.
SEC, a long time, recent change. ACC, long time, about to be a change. Larry Scott, I'm not sure how many years, but the Pac-12 is about to make a change.
He's been there 10
and
years.
With the relatively simultaneous changing of the guard at some of the largest conferences and most successful conferences in college athletics, do you see this as almost a wholesale changing of the guard in college athletics itself? And if so, how do you think it might change?
Yeah, it's a really interesting point. So five major Power Five conferences, and Bob Bowlesby now is the longest tenured, and Greg Sankey is next. That's how dramatic. And Greg Sankey has been in there for almost 6 years. So you are seeing a major paradigm shift, and I think that there's one more shoe to drop here that may be the most important. And that is the NCAA president, Mark Emmert. There's no way he can continue much longer. And I think when that reshuffles, you're going to see things starting to get done in a more efficient way. The one issue that remains is for these people to work collectively and collaboratively. And that didn't happen last year when they needed it the most. But I do think you have a different breed, a younger, more in tune with where young players and students are than we've ever seen before.
I think we're going to see a lot of differences.
Yeah, no. Well, I think it's already starting to happen a little bit just within the SEC alone, with the television change that occurred recently. That is going to be dramatic. Hey, thank you. Appreciate your call, and great to have you on. Let's continue with more calls. And how about Chuck is up next in Mississippi. Hey, Chuck.
Hello, Mr. Seinbaum.
Hey there.
It's a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you very much.
I got a question for you. You was talking about Bart Starr and Joe Namath that you interviewed.
Right.
And the reason I watch your show, besides the sports, is also how you conduct your interviews. The most famous person as an athlete that I interviewed was Brooke Robertson. How do you go about interviewing someone that is famous as that?
Yeah, I will tell you, I have learned the hard way, and Chuck, I'll get to my point in a second about learning. I view every interview similarly but differently. The most important thing I feel is to glean something from that person. I think you have to be insanely curious as an interviewer. Now, as I say that, some interviews you know you're going to have some limitations, and you just have to accept that. But the worst interviews I have ever done are some of the subjects that I know the most about. And the reason for that is that sometimes you just have to block out. I had a guest on a couple of years ago who was a novelist. Nobody really knew him, but I was obsessed with him because I'd read every one of his books. And halfway through the interview, I forgot that less than 1% of the audience had ever read this guy. And I just needed to shut up and let him talk instead of trying to act like how much I knew. And the point being, most people don't know much about the subject. Now, you just mentioned somebody very famous. So when you have somebody very famous on, the challenge becomes even more, because we do know so much about them. So you still try to learn something that maybe we didn't know. I'll tell you the story, and some of the longtime listeners have heard it a million times. We had Don Larson on one time. He passed away a couple of years ago. For those who don't know, Don Larson threw the only perfect game in the World Series for the New York Yankees, and I believe it was 1956. So if I missed a year, I'm sorry. And he wasn't really a great pitcher. That's what he was known for. So what am I supposed to do? He happened to be in town. They called us and said he's going to be at a card show. Would you like to interview Don Larson? I said, of course. I grew up a Yankees fan. So I made the cardinal mistake. Guess what the first question was? Don Larson's here. Mr. Larson, tell us about that perfect game in 1956, right? That's what I wanted to know about.
Right.
His answer was, you know, I've been talking about that for 50 years. I'm sick of that. I go, okay. And you know what? I didn't have any earthly idea what else to ask him, because he really had never done anything else. So you always have to go about, no matter whether they're, you know, whether I'm interviewing Barack Obama, Donald Trump, who I have interviewed in the past, or someone who is very, you just have to try to make them comfortable, make them want to talk. And a lot of subjects, quite frankly, do not. They want to give very standardized answers, but everyone is different. And those who you think are going to be great sometimes turn out to be complete duds.
Well, the last interview I did was with Brooke Robertson. It's almost like me giving a public speech. I had butterflies all in my stomach.
Yeah. Well, you're right. I mean, that's the real challenge when you talk to someone that you idolized or revered. And I mean, after a while, you do get used to it. But Chuck, when it comes to your heroes, it's never easy.
Well, again, I'm going to tell you how much people you touch, especially people who are homebound. You don't know how much of an impact you have on those people's lives.
Well, Chuck, that means a great deal, because thank you, and you take care of yourself. But I will say, for anyone who thinks they know it all in this industry, and at times we all think we do know it all, the last year has been the most moving of my life in terms of hearing stories like yours and learning more about people, because we've all been through a very difficult time, and it's not over yet. Let's hope it's over soon. But really appreciate what you said. We'll take a break. Bill Walton is going to join us in the next hour. Another one of those people that I grew up revering. I've interviewed him a couple of times before, but it doesn't matter, because every day with Bill Walton is like hitting the reset button. Stick around.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
And we welcome you back. It is great to have all of you here. It's been a busy show. We started the program talking about the new hire at Tennessee, who was introduced today. We will talk more about that a little bit later on. We had Kansas Story Leon, the athletic director at Vanderbilt. We began that conversation talking about Sarah Fuller, the Vanderbilt kicker, introducing Kamala Harris at the inauguration 2 days ago. We had Brian Harsin on, the new Auburn coach. It was great to hear from him. Coming up in a few minutes, Bill Walton, the legendary basketball player. We'll try to compare his legendary dynasty at UCLA, where they won 10 out of 12 championships to Saban. And we'll remember Hank Aaron in the final hour.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.